There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
We may not be able to get in on the sporting action like we used to, but we can get in on some exclusive offers from Renault. To celebrate their third year as official car partner of the GAA, Renault is offering a range of special offers exclusive to all GAA club members. So now you can take home the win right to your door. Check out Renault.ie/GAA to find out more.
With Renault, official car partner of the GAA, taking the passion of a nation to a whole new gear.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Listen,
hello everyone, you're very welcome to the Renault Irish Examiner Gaelic Football Show.
My name is Paul Rouse and I'm joined by the former Armagh footballer Oisín McConville, by Stephen Rochford, the former Mayo manager, and later in the show by Brian McGuigan, the former Tyrone footballer.
We have a straightforward question to answer today. How do you win an All-Ireland final? To answer that question, there is no better place to start than what Mead women did yesterday. Absolute rank outsiders dethroned red-hot favourites with a stunning performance. They did it with a show of no little skill, but also with unreal physical commitment. Oisín, Mead were awesome yesterday.
They are. I mean, you can see, Paul, where they've come from. How they changed things up a little bit and were able to follow it through, execute a plan. I think they had, like, the likes of Duggan and Stacey Grimes, who I've seen up close with DKT. She was a student there, and when she came into the college, like, if you look at her physically, you wouldn't think that she'd be able to dominate a game in the way she does, but she's a phenomenal athlete. Vicky Wall as well. I think, you know, they had lots of players who were particularly cool on the ball when they needed to be to see the game out. That's a couple of times they've been able to do that. There just seems to be serious belief. It seems like a change room that you'd want to be in. It's unbelievable when you think where they've came from and since 2017. But a brilliant win for them yesterday. And to be honest, you know, they were playing against a team who had obviously dominated, but maybe just were slightly on the wane. And I felt they were going to beat them with just pure pace and passion and just will to win. And it's amazing where that can take you in the modern game.
Stephen, everyone talked about the ambush from the previous week of Tyrone, of Kerry by Tyrone, but this was a real one. The way the rank outsiders, what Mead did and how they set about doing it.
Yeah, like, I mean, firstly, I don't know how anyone describes an ambush in Kerry Tyrone, because I think everybody saw that coming to a degree around what Tyrone are about. But certainly, in the context of yesterday's game, certainly didn't see that. I wouldn't be as familiar with the ladies' game as Oisín did, but I tell you, I really, really enjoyed yesterday. Enjoyed it from, you know, an entertainment point of view, as well as the underdog taking the real fight to Dublin. And I was just hugely impressed with what Mead went about. They looked really organised. I think a couple of the camera angles from behind the goal showed the amount of work they had done on their kick-out. Players running into space, real team effort in relation to those restarts, and then, you know, real leadership. Like, I thought they just held on to the ball so well. They never looked like they were being like Dublin with all the experience. They never looked to have rattled them, you know. And even though when Dublin were chasing down the lead in the latter half of the second half, they were still so composed on the ball. You know, they seemed like they were going to be caught in a tight corner, but the likes of an Evine Cleary or Emma Troy, you know, they they were able to get out of those corners. And, you know, Oisin alluded to, I thought Vicky Wall was immense yesterday. And, you know, a shame on me that I didn't know as much about these guys. But I was texting one of my mates, Jordan, and I was just saying, this girl just put me up on her back yesterday, and real leadership around the middle of the field. She just wanted the ball. And each time she got the ball, she just went forward. She just went and bet whoever was marking her in that one-on-one and just lifted the crowd each and every time. Then Emma Duggan was really, really good up front. But the player that really stood out for me also was Niamh O'Sullivan. Looked a real light-type player. But every time she got the ball, there was a bounce in her step. And she kicked three fabulous points. And, you know, I'd say she was just gassed as they took her off towards the tail end, because I was there thinking, oh, no, you got to keep her on. But she just ran that pitch over and over again.
She kicked a point in front of the Nally late in the game. It was an absolutely outstanding score. And it was even to go for it after she'd missed one from the far side. It looked like a team who were absolutely in the zone and who absolutely believed. But if you look at the week before that game, and even the hours before the game, I thought after the game, Mick Bowen, the Dublin manager, and the Dublin players were unbelievably classy. I thought they were hugely dignified. They were really gracious. They behaved exactly like the champion team that they were afterwards. But I thought in the week before the game, it was almost as if they couldn't quite conceive of losing in how they went about it. How do you feel about that, Stephen?
Yeah, well, Dublin had all the stars. That's the reality, and maybe no more than the men's team. You know, found it hard. They probably just found. I think Oisin the night of the after the game said about the weight of the medals in the pockets, and maybe it was hard for them to not get distracted by the talk of five in a row. And it does. It is difficult to keep that. That sense of focus. And Meath, you know, Meath had come from where? They were the intermediate champions last year. They weren't going to, how dare them to take it away from us. But it just shows that when you have the fight, and obviously, you know, Meath, you could sort of say, could come in, they had nothing to lose. But there was more to them than that. You know, I think that would be disrespectful. They led from the outset, and they never gave away the win. And, you know, Dublin have been great champions, in fairness, and there's some fabulous footballers. And, you know, I think Meath just got in under their skin. And the one thing you talk about in coaching is and in preparation is expect the unexpected. But this was one I don't think Dublin expected.
And that's it. It's a reminder, Oisin, that the wheel always turns in sport. That you're it just felt like it just... As the game went along, the reality was dawning on Dublin that this team they were playing were a coming force and right in front of their eyes.
And maybe Mick Bowen, honestly, maybe he's seen that, and maybe he was just trying to change things up a little bit in the narrative, as far as the narrative is concerned. When you see a team like that coming, it's an irresistible force, and sometimes you think, okay, so we've won four All-Ireland finals. Maybe we haven't really turned it on. You know, maybe this is the day that we turn it on. So you're changing the narrative. You're changing the mindset in the change room as to, look, we really need to put a performance together here. So rather than look at it as total arrogance or cockiness or that they were going to win the game quite easily, he maybe just was trying to change things. Maybe he seen something in the weeks leading up to it. Maybe, you know, they thought, look, it's me, you know, we'll go into the game, we're fairly complacent. So instead of going in and just, you know, going the way they went into other All-Ireland finals and trying to play things down, maybe he thought it was the time to play things up. So, but look, as I say, you know, me just the way they started the game, and like when you start a game like that, I suppose a team like Dublin thinks, don't worry, we'll stick in it, we'll be patient, which they tried to do, to be honest, overly patient, I thought. Could have been a bit more direct, I think, in the way they played, which might have hurt maybe me a little bit more. But they probably thought, look, we're going to get back into the game. There's no way they're going to be able to keep this pace up. And in fact, they just got they just went at it. They just went at it even harder. Like the girl Troy who scored the two points. I mean, you can't live with that. And like when you consider the amount of space that Dublin were giving them, and Meath were very cute in the way they switched the ball at times, you know, when there's somebody in space, and on the day they were able to get the scores, they just about got them over the line. But the one you were talking about, Neville Sullivan in the corner under the Natty stand, she had no choice in the end. The support runners were starting to day, and the pace of the game had started to get them a little bit. So that was an absolutely crucial score because it just kept them that goal ahead all the time. But it was some performance.
I just thought in that context when you said that as well, is though that they didn't look like a team that were hanging on either. You know, every time they actually ended up coming back to be able to kick a point. Even before half time, Emma Duggan kicked a point, I think, or maybe it was Emma Troy's point, maybe just before half time. But every time Dublin tried to lay a glove on them, they were able to just pounce back. And I just thought that was a team that's a real sign of belief. That actually they were consistent throughout the game. And I know that they didn't kick as much in the second half, but like, you know, part of their job was to slow down Dublin and nullify their attacking options.
What is clear is that Meath got themselves to a kind of a psychological pitch to allow them to perform on that day. We'll be talking about Tyrone and Mayo later in the show as we go on specifically to that match. But that idea of getting to a performance, Oisín, in the week of a game, what were you like in the week of a big match, before a big match? How did you get yourself ready?
Personally?
Yeah.
I was like an antichrist for about 7 days. Usually that's how that's how people just, people who knew me, like the family members and that, would completely avoid me the week of a match because you just couldn't look at me. And then...
Why were you like that?
Just nerves, I'd say. Nerves. The build up to the game. I probably didn't embrace the build up at times in the way that I should have. I just wanted it to be Sunday at 3 o'clock, or even, to be honest, I used to feel a huge sense of relief when I actually jumped on the bus, you know, to head to a game, or if we were going away even the day before. Huge relief, because then you're in an environment where everybody feels the same way, because going through the same stuff, have the same thoughts. I would say I probably breezed through the early parts of my intercounty career because I didn't really have any nerves. Same, you know, any big games I played, didn't really feel particularly nervous beforehand. And the older I got, the more nervous I got. You know, I was always the one who had to go for another toilet break during the huddle in the change rooms, and I'd still have to go when we get back out onto the pitch and that sort of thing. So yeah, I would say that I got a lot more nervous as time went on. You know that as far as the intensity of training goes, if you're playing an All Ireland final on a Sunday, Tuesday night, you might get 30 good minutes, maybe 35. You might even get a match if you're lucky of, you know, 5 or 10 minutes aside. But then you know that the rest of the week's just going to be, it's going to be pretty down, pretty relaxed. Like, we are going back a bit to when I was playing in big games, but pretty relaxed, you know, trying to keep people fresh for the weekend. So you knew there wasn't a big pile. You know, I wouldn't overdo it, you know, as far as free taking practice or anything. I used to take 10 on a Tuesday night, 10 on a Friday night, usually. But as I say, the relief for me was when we all jumped on the bus and headed to wherever we were going, whether that be the day before or the day of. And then it's proper build up for me because, you know, I got very frustrated with how's it gonna go at the weekend, sort of, like, those questions just killed me. Like, and eventually I started you know, I went from the usual platitudes to just saying, "Oh, we're flying. We'll win easy at the weekend," and that usually shocked people. So there was never a follow up question, and that used to get me out of it. So,
Sleep the night before a big match?
I would sleep, but I might only get 5 or 6 hours maybe. But that was loads.
Did you share when you did you stay in Dublin before All Ireland final? So you'd stay in Dublin.
Yeah, we used to stay in Dublin. I suppose at our peak, we were in Dublin most weekends. If I'm honest, we would have did a recce or a training run where we would have done almost everything apart from actually getting out on the Croke Park and playing some football or training. So most weekends we spent in the City West. That was basically our base for. It was probably our base for. Definitely 3 or 4 years anyway. And as I say, I think at one stage we could have been in the City West 4 or 5 weekends in a row. We were very attuned to what was happening, and we had you knew exactly where everything was happening, meetings, we used to have mass the morning of games, all that sort of thing. I suppose it's slightly different at the morning of an All-Ireland final because, you've got a lot of supporters hanging around. Do you know what I mean? And
in the hotel.
Myself and Stevie used to nip down for a bit of early breakfast.
Stevie McDonald. Did you share a room together?
No. We used to meet at the breakfast buffet while the other, maybe at 8 o'clock, because maybe our breakfast wasn't until 9:30 or that, but it just wouldn't have been exactly what me and Stevie wanted to eat. So there mightn't have been some of the stuff there. Like John McCluskey was with us, and he wouldn't even let us have butter. And that just killed me at that time. I couldn't handle not having butter. But so we just had a lot of boys used to have their own little routine. A lot of boys, might go to the gym the day before a game, pool. I didn't do any of that. Once I get away from home, for the actual match, things started to settle down a bit. And then after that, I would say I was fairly calm going into the games. And I enjoyed the change room because there's so many different characters. We had the guys, we had the two Macs who would book if we're there an hour and a half before the game, an hour and 40 minutes, they'd sleep for at least a half an hour of that, sprawled out over the change room somewhere. And Geezer and McGrain or boys like that could be taking the door off the hinges. So that was just the different characters that you had. The training area in on the Croke Park, the warm-up area, we would have boys who would go in there and literally kick football for 40 minutes beforehand, and I enjoyed the change rooms because there was so much happening, there were so many different characters, and not everybody's, but the prep, it's unbelievable when you look around the change room and you realize the difference between some people's preparation for what is essentially they're going to do. Everybody's going out to do the exact same thing, and people get themselves ready in different ways. But as I say, once I get into the change room, it was a very comfortable place to be, and I enjoyed it. But the older I got, the more nervous I got.
Stephen, that thing of players being different in the dressing room or different in the week before the game, different on the bus, how do you cope with that?
Well, I think, you want different characters and you need different personalities there. I think for my experience is that was that where Oisín is talking about going to City West and it became their second home type thing. When I was involved with Mayo, they had a lot of familiarity with Croke Park. I think we were always trying to get to hotels that wouldn't have allowed us to have any supporters away. So probably different times insofar as, you want fellas to have their space, but at the same time, they take great comfort in each other. So the same fellas that have the same places on the bus and They'd have the same guys that they'd be rooming with. They'd have the same corner of the dressing room. And so I think there was always comfort for them in familiarity. So different guys did different things. But you know, there was at the same time, there was nothing there that sort of would have been something that would have given us any concern anyway. You know, fellas were well experienced to I suppose, sleeping away from home, going to Croke Park, that environment. So that wasn't typically a concern for us back in those days.
You can see yesterday that the Mead players grew into the game, right? They absolutely grew into the game as it went along. Did you look at a player on All-Ireland final day and think that they were actually shrinking into themselves on the day? Did you look at it from early in the day and see there's a problem here and there, or even in the course of the dressing room or then in the match? Did that ever strike you?
No. I, when you do say that, Paul, I remember whatever way it is with us. I remember nearly the last, about the last 5 minutes before we used to leave the hotel. So we used to stay in my time there in the St. Helens, the Radisson St. Helens in just off Stillorgan Dual Carriageway.
Very fine breakfast there as well, by the way, Oisín, if you're...
Yeah.
Bear not mind.
We used to love them low-fat butter. but I remember for whatever reason, we ended up being in the large dining hall on a Sunday morning as Oisín, you had your routine. So there was mass and there was fellas, we'd go for a walk and all different things. And you'd be back and they'd be doing their own stretching. And they typically got togged out to a point at the hotel onto the bus and away. But you found yourself, you know, maybe going to the comfort of the other selectors or then saying, well, what do you think? How do you see their mood in? And typically, we're good, or there was a wink, or there was something. So you always were sort of taking comfort with what other people were seeing. And typically, the S&C and the physio guys would always give you a good sense of where fellas were, because they got a bit more, I used the word intimate, or a bit more close on, hands-on work with them in that sort of 12 or 24-hour period beforehand. So they gave you a good sense whether somebody was... what sort of form they were in. But I have to say, and thankfully, it again, maybe it was the experience and the routine of the group were well used to it, that typically didn't see fellas sort of, you know, stepping. They actually stepped forward for those occasions, and thankfully they did.
What's it like on the bus to Croke Park for a big day? Mayo fans are famously restrained as you pass through the streets. What is it? Well, what's it like being coming in from Stillorgan? You've left Stillorgan, you're on the bus and you're going to Croke Park. Like, what are you feeling?
Yeah, well, like I think you always take a little bit of humour from what are the guards on the motorbikes doing? How they're weaving in behind, and you're sort of at once. Oh, Christ, well, if there was nearly an accident, or there might have been, you know, there is that sort of element. It is very quiet, no doubt. There's a lot of guys listening to maybe a podcast or you know, a bit of music. There wouldn't typically be music on the bus now in ours. Guys would be more on their own individual stuff. But I know coming into Drumcondra, and when things had slowed down a lot more and you saw fans and spectators in that gathering, yeah, you did sort of sit up a bit higher in the chair, and I don't know, whatever way your chest seemed to beam out another little bit. But I was saying this to somebody a few weeks ago, that, you know, those little, you know, in games there was some great moments and some hard moments as well, but I'll always have memories of us driving into Drumcondra, and just as the way as you come into the back of the Cusick there, that sort of little road gets very tight. And, you know, I've memories of seeing Mayo supporters, people from home, you know, people you mightn't have seen for 10, 15 years. It might be somebody that was in your class in school or whatever, with a Mayo jersey going into the game, and you sort of got a real sense of pride to sort of say, yeah, we're here with our own, or we're here representing our own. And they were nice. But thankfully, we hadn't anybody trying to, It wasn't a Galatasaray, or it wasn't a Liverpool-Everton type fiasco with anyone jumping onto the bus or anything like that.
And what about the Dublin fans? When Dublin fans see your bus going by, what was the reaction?
Yeah, do you know what? Not as much. Not as much going to games. But Christ above, they were loud when we were coming away after All-Ireland finals. That was sure. You know, there'd been numbers outside some of the pubs on the way. They weren't... actually, in fairness, I remember in one or two places, they're actually pretty gracious in some places, sort of clapping, but there was... Yeah, you'd rather have seen their hitting their hands than them clapping us.
Oisin.
Yeah, no, the bus journey in was we used to have a bit of crack, cause we just like boys, like we all sat in the same seats, so we had the same crack. We probably had the same crack as we had the last day, but it seems particularly funny that, you know, and as Stephen says, there's plenty going on in the streets and that, so you're able to have a look. I remember actually going into Clonus one day, and there was somebody who was, let's just say, quite inebriated in front of the bus, and we kept beeping the tray and getting him out of the way. And when he turned around, it was a guy who would go on and play for Armagh for about 15 years. but he just happened to be in the road that day, and he was on the bus the following year, I know that. But the thing about the bus journey in the road is that I suppose we used to use Al Pacino speech, so we used to use that from maybe 5 minutes from Crow Park, so it was just ending as we're more or less getting off the bus.
A Game of Inches speech.
Yeah. So
you remember it?
Yeah. I can remember it, yeah. I couldn't recite it to you, but I can remember it because it meant, like, I know now, probably, I don't know if teams are using that sort of stuff, but at the time it meant a lot to us because there was more meaning behind it. In one of the occasions, the boys, Hugh Campbell and Des Jennings, were sports psychologists, and they had got our family members to recite one line of it. And that probably made it feel a bit more ours than just any other sort of speech. That was quite emotional because it was families doing it, and my mum was doing it, and obviously my father wasn't around anymore, so that was quite emotional. But once you got on the bus and then you heard that, then you're tuned in then. And Benny Tierney was one for running around the bus and keeping everybody's spirits up, and if some boys didn't like that because they were trying to, you know, be particularly focused. But as I say, just different things work for different people. I used to feel sorry for the new guys in the panel when we went into Crow Park, because you go in, sit down, and go, no, that's my seat. And they go to another seat, nah, that's it, no. And so they all used to end up in the one corner of the dunes room. In fact, they used to stand in the middle with their bags until all the other positions had been taken up, because I don't know what you guys were like, but when I changed across, I changed in the same place for 23 years, like, you know, fucking, and nobody was for moving me, like, you know, and it wasn't even a great seat. But it was my seat, and that was it. So the same thing in Crow Park. By the time you get in there, you know, you get your seat, you're comfortable, you know, with your surroundings. I would never be able to tell, because the change rooms are obviously so alike. I would never be able to tell, was that the change room we were in the last time, or we were in a different change room. So I was never sure until we actually come out and run, whether you turn left or you turn right, like, you know. So it was just a very comfortable, as I say, it's very comfortable to be in those surroundings. And the bus was different for everybody, you know, a lot of guys, as time went on, to be honest, a lot of guys listened to music, you know, had the earphones in and very much doing their own thing. But I enjoyed the crack, you know. It was four of us. It was myself, Benny Tierney, Stephen McDonald, and Kevin McAvena, and we used to sit. We had two.
That's
seats.
Actually a school teacher's nightmare. That is
we had. Well, Benny was a school teacher, believe it or not, or is a school teacher. He's actually a principal now. But anyhow, And we used to sit two face and two, so we used to enjoy the crack and that, you know. And to be honest, I used to get you switched off for that half hour, which I think was completely necessary, especially when you felt about games in the end the way I did about them, you know.
Did you ever walk out there? When you made it out onto the field, it's either in the warm up or after the warm up, or did you ever just feel, I'm not right today. I'm not ready for this, or this just doesn't feel good.
Yeah, most days after about 4 minutes, you go, have I ever trained before? You know, like, why am I absolutely out of my feet after 4 minutes? And it wouldn't matter that's the exact same thing that happened to you last time, and yet you get yourself into the game and you're flying and you feel as if you could play for 120 minutes. But a lot of players will find that very early on in the game, is that, you know, they find it takes them a little bit of time to get their second wind. A lot of players probably find that now in the warm-up, because the warm-ups are probably a lot more nuanced than they once were, and you're probably getting to the pitch of it maybe a little bit quicker. Our warm-ups tended to be fairly relaxed, and we didn't have a lot of teams. Most teams, in fact, play the game beforehand. Some teams like to go two games, so whether it be, I don't know, 8v8 or whatever it is. But we never did that. Our warm-up was quite relaxed. And even the last 5 minutes of it was the defenders and the goalkeeper in behind the goals, which in fairness is still done, but probably not to the extent that we would have liked to do it. And when you're a free taker, I used to like to get three or four in beforehand on my own terms and my own time and that. So, like, you know, you could dip in and out of what we were doing, maybe, you know.
Stephen, I know you were a very fine and successful footballer in your own right, but I do want to talk to you about the management side of things. And what is the earliest in a big game you've made a substitution?
Earliest? God above, no, you caught me on that one. I think we had to, well, not, it was one that was put on us. Well, obviously, the 2016 replay, we had to, Lee Keegan had got a black card and we could replace the black card. Stephen Cohen came in. So that happened, I think, about 20, 25 minutes, you know, into the game. Thankfully, we haven't, my own, from the top of my head, I can't remember us having to sort of dip into one before half time. But even in those, you know, when you're talking about preparation, that typically we would have had a sort of a bit of a checklist around the what ifs. So if he gets injured, or who's covering the half back line, or what does that mean for a matchup, or all that. So it was typically it'd be a run to sort of say, right, he's coming off, and right, these are the two candidates. What does that matchup look like in the context of maybe the way the game is going? But haven't had to make any of those calls. Any of the controversial ones were done really before the game.
Yeah, but that call, and I do want to talk about not particularly that call, but one of the people who was involved in that call in a while. We won't come to him yet. I was just thinking. I played in the county final. One of the county finals I played in at home, and there was a friend of mine who was a selector on the team. And he told me he wanted to go to the manager to take me off during the parade, which I thought was a small bit harsh before the game. Anyway,
we want to know what you were doing in the warm-up.
I do want to talk to you about supporters in the week before the game. I read what James Horan was said at the weekend. It was a really interesting interview, and he had a brilliant phrase where he talked about Mayo supporters, and he says, we have a lot of well-wishers in Mayo. What is it like to be in Mayo this week, in the week of an All-Ireland final?
I found, and maybe it's from my own experience, that it hasn't been as crazy as it has been. Like, I can sort of go back and think from 96 on, and how the place was getting, you know, over the course of the next 10 or 12 years, when we were in probably the finals up to 06, You know, things were just becoming more daft as the time went on, and from sheep being painted or cars being coloured or houses being painted, or, you know, and then there was always the sort of the fundraising events or the, you know, the up for the match type events, and they'd all been. I think then, you know, things have sort of changed, and training sessions and that now are all behind closed doors. Remember back in 96, the Mayo team used to train in our home pitch in Cross Malina on the Sunday before all their championship games. And like, it was, geez, this was like Christmas coming to young guys. You'd be over, you'd be watching, be it the Lee McHales or the Kieran Max, obviously, the James Nallens, all these guys. And it was a great opportunity to see what was happening and who was going well. But then, you know, I think as time has gone on, and, you know, we've been in a number of finals, obviously, over the last decade. You know, it sort of, it goes seesaw from, I remember back probably in 2012 when we felt like that we were the favourites, maybe, or we had a real chance against Donegal. Things are a little bit giddy. Then to play in Kerry and Dublin over the course, you're definitely more the underdog and things are a lot more settled. But there is a quiet confidence. But I don't think anybody genuinely is thinking that we have this in the bag. There's a lot more of experience of the hurt to sort of temper the majority of people's feelings and that. And people, I think, have cautious optimism at the moment.
Is that how you describe the mood in Mayo?
I do, yeah. Like, I think there's a lot of belief that the there's enough quality in the group. There's a good blend of the experience and sort of that youth, sort of that youthful exuberance, that pace that they bring.
What's the best team that you put out as manager? Which is the best performance? Which is the best team that you put on the field?
I think the 2017 All Ireland final was probably the best, best performance that we got. Even though, like, the performance maybe in the Kerry All Ireland semi final, the replay, I thought it was a very controlled performance. It looked like winning it, but I think on you probably measured them off the very, very big day, and I think that Dublin team were coming to its peak at that time. And so I think 2017 was probably the best balanced team that we had, and the best performance that we got out of that group.
Do you think that this Mayo team that is going to take the field next weekend is better than that 2017 team?
I think that doesn't really matter, Paul, to be honest. It's always, again, you know, it's no matter than when you were going back to maybe talking about Mick Bohan's comments about getting that big performance. It's about getting the win, you know. What does it matter how good you were versus the teams of the past? Are Tyrone as good as the teams that are in 2003, 2005, and 2008? I don't think so either. But this game on its own merits counts for just the two teams next Saturday evening. So I think there's. I know that myself. When Killian O'Connor got hurt at the start of the summer, I found it hard to sort of see that the team was going to be on the doorstep of an All-Ireland win. But in fairness to the Tommy Conroys, the Ryan O'Donoghues, the Kevin McLaughlins, those guys have stood up and they've been performing consistently. Yeah, they've had moments whereby they've come down, but consistently they've finished strong, and that's a credit to that group.
Do you think they'll win?
I do. I genuinely believe that they'll win. I think that they'll have learned a lot, or the opportunity is there for learning that they'll have learned out of what Kerry didn't do more than what Tyrone did, and I think that's where the game. You win. I don't see Tyrone changing up much. I think the 4 week break actually will have been good for Mayo. I think beating Dublin, it was going to take them a week to come down from that, the high of that win. They had a week then to really get their preparation on track. They'll have had the time to see Tyrone. And, and from the following morning, from last Sunday weeks, they would have been able to put to into action whatever the plan needs to be to beat Tyrone. And I think if Owen McLaughlin and Oisín Mullen are available, I think that the
you think Owen McLaughlin is available?
Well, the more I'm hearing that locally, I don't know if that's spin that's coming out of the camp or what it is, but I am hearing that that he'll be in the shake up, whether the decision is taken on him on Wednesday to risk him. I think they'll weigh that up. It's a difficult one. He's a young lad. Will it be playing on his mind? I'm sure James has considered all of those things. But if he is deemed fit and well by the management and the medical team, I think him and Oisín Mullen will be two really confidence boosters to the group. But they also have the qualities, I think. But their raw athleticism and pace and that, they're the actual things that actually can hurt Tyrone. Because if you're going to ask it to leave it to Lee Keegan and Paddy Durkin to start punching those holes, I think Tyrone will be waiting for them. That would be the fear.
Oisín?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Look at if Owen McLaughlin is fit, that's a massive one. You know, his second half against Galway was exceptional. Just even the balls that he didn't get on, just getting up that wing, pulling players out of the way, and that's exactly the template you need against Tyrone. You need to get players ahead of the ball. Yes, you need to get players behind the ball, you know, when they're attacking and all that. But when you're attacking, Mayo are best at attacking when they attack a pace. They're not brilliant being patient, lads. You know, we've seen that in the first half against Galway and the first half against Dublin. But there's going to be times where, you know, that's exactly what they're going to need to do, and they're going to have to be better at minding the ball than Kerry will. And I think the thing about Mayo is that they've seen a lot of this stuff before. They've had to break down one of the greatest teams who've ever played the game. They've managed to do that over the years on a consistent basis. It's amazing to turn around the players. Like, I'm just looking even at last year's All-Ireland final team. You're possibly talking four, if not five, you know, changes from that team, which doesn't sound a lot, but it's a third-year team, you know, in the matter of 9 months. But I just think the players that have come in have added what Mayo needed, and that is that extra little bit of energy. I think with Kennedy in the middle of the field, I think, you know, Aidan O'Shea could realistically, you could afford to play him there. I think it was Keith Higgins maybe said that last week, but I would agree with that there's an opportunity maybe to play Aidan O'Shea in that area, try and get him to turn over the ball. And that's, you know, if you turn the ball over against your own, all it comes down to then is just good decision making in the top half of the field. And I think, you know, like, that's an area that Mayo definitely have improved on in the last couple of games. But yeah, I think the McLaughlin one, Oisín Mullen, just because I think if they play him, they may play him on McKenna. And if they play him on McKenna, that gets him further out the field and up the field. We've seen the first half of the All-Ireland final last year, he had Conor Callan on the back foot for the most of it. And I think, you know, he can add significantly to that drive going forward and that extra bit of pace. So, but then again, you know, I don't know whether it's because of the hair, but I get the impression that O'Hara and Oisín Mullen are similar type footballers, but I probably haven't. As I say, the hair is confusing me a little bit, and but I do think that O'Hara probably is better a little bit deeper, and he may pick up McCurry. And as I say, if that's the case, if that's what Mayo are thinking, I think with McKenna and the way he likes to vary things. Mullen is as comfortable in the full back lane as he is in the half back lane, but just what he can give them going the other way. And McKenna will let you do that, you know, because he won't track all the runs. He's significantly better than what he was at the start of the year, but he won't track those runs. You just have to make sure that when he drifts into that full back lane or full forward lane, that Oisin Mullen's aware of that and he picks him up, you know.
Is that the matchup, Stephen? Are they the two matchups? Is it Oisin Mullen on Conor McKenna, and is it Darren McCurry being picked up by Pádraig Ó'Hara?
I think Pádraig Ó'Hara will be on Darren McCurry. Yeah. I think that there's good flexibility within the Mayo players as regards who they pick up. If Oisin doesn't play, I would be thinking you might put Stephen Cohen on Matty Donnelly and try and let Lee go off on Lee Keegan or off on Conor McKenna. Part of it as well is that you don't know whether Michael O'Neill or Conor Myler or Kieran McGeary or who's going to play on the half back line versus who's going to play on the half forward line. So I don't think Mayo will get too bogged down in the matchups, but I do think McKenna offers you somebody that can counter attack because he's playing out really sort of as a third midfielder as such. And Matty Donnelly, whilst he'll start at full forward, he'll also drift out the field. Now, that might be on the back of substitutions and then bringing on a Colin McShane or something like that. But, I think there's good flexibility in the Mayo defenders to be able to mix things up. But how they go about using their pace and their power is definitely the key to winning the game.
Is it
Oisin,
is it Oisin then on to Dara Canavan when he comes on, and who goes on to McShane when he comes on if McShane doesn't start?
I think a little bit, you know, you have to see, you know, who replaces who. So if it's a Matty Donnelly into the middle for a Kennedy or a Kilpatrick, it's going to be, you know, whoever's on Donnelly that then takes up McShane, I think. And you know, the obvious typical ones have been Oisin or Lee to mark those people close to goal. But, you know, Stephen Cohen has marked Michael Murphy close to goal. He's marked Jim McConnelly close to goal. He's marked, you know, Conor O'Callaghan, Kieran Kilkenny in the past. So I don't think that will be a major issue. The Darren McCurry and Darragh Canavan on the field will be one that they need to be mindful. Enda Hessian has played on the half back line and he came on in the half forwards up until half time in the game against Dublin. So, you know, that will be one that they certainly have to have considered for.
I think there's a chance Conor McKenna won't start. I think there's a chance that they'll go with Colin McShane and go for it early and try and get ahead and try and suck Mayo onto them. At the other end, what are the matchups at the other end? I think Aidan O'Shea will play full forward, so who'll pick him?
Well, if he plays full forward, McNamee.
I think McNamee will mark him no matter where, unless he actually plays at midfield. In other words, he'll be there for the throw-up, but he has to sort of remain there. That'll put, I suppose, a bit of thinking towards Brian Duher and Logan to how they sort of shape the full back line in that case. Like, who's going to play a full forward then, obviously, is the next question then for Mayo. Is it going to be a Conor Loftus? Is it going to be, are they going to play Darren McHale in there and sort of look to run the defence around the place? That is part of the answer, but don't know if it'll be that or a Jeremy O'Connor or who.
Or who will... is this one of those games where the matchups are not quite... It's not like Tyrone-Kerry or it's not like Mayo-Dublin in that getting the specific matchups in the full forward line isn't really the defining thing here. The defining thing here is going to be the middle eight players on both teams going up and down and who can actually break it.
Well, for me, the matchups will become crucial if Mayo don't have Oisin Mullen and McLaughlin available. In other words, the threats that Tyrone will have identified will obviously be much smaller. And I think the key matchup will be who will Conor Myler then mark, because he has now become the key sacrificial lamb to just wipe out. And I've seen him, I remember back, as far as 2018, we played Kildare in a league game above in Newbridge, and Kevin McLaughlin was electric. He was linking defence to attack. You know, he was a scoring threat. Played Tyrone the following week. Conor Myler moves onto him, and Kevin can't literally get a breath, never mind a ball, for the game. So I would anticipate that you will see Myler going on to Paddy Durkin, certainly if the Owen McLaughlin, that's where McLaughlin and Mullen now becomes much more important than their defensive duties. It's going to ask different questions around what Tyrone like to do in those scenarios.
And if so, then Petey Hart will go on to Kevin McLaughlin, is that right?
I think so. Yeah, I think from my experience versus Tyrone in the championship, Donegal, he was on a defensive job on Niall O'Donnell, who had a super game the week before against Derry. I think in fairness to Duher and Logan, they have readjusted, I suppose, what Peter Hart's role is in the team. He's not an attacking wing back with sort of this license, right? Like, he is doing a defensive job, but he's also now getting the blend right to get forward, and he scored in each of the four championship games. So he's got a really good balance in what Peter Hart is doing. I think you're seeing a much more consistent championship performance for Petey Hart this year than maybe he's had for quite some time.
Were you impressed by Tyrone when they played against Donegal? You were on the sideline that day. You saw a lot of it. You saw things that went on. Were you impressed by them?
Was I impressed? I think sometimes you're probably too emotionally attached to the game to sort of weigh up what were the sort of the positive things they were doing. But having watched them against Monaghan and up close against Kerry, I have been impressed by them. I haven't bought totally into that they have changed utterly from the Mickey Hart, Gavin Devlin view. I think that they are applying pressure, yes, in a more advanced position, but I think you can even see it in the Cathal McShane point in extra time. They didn't have a player outside their 65. And maybe that was just a phase of play. But, you know, they drop back and they track men, but they're not dropping in numbers. There's not big sort of guys just getting into zonal areas. They are, you know, taking up players, and they are applying that pressure, as it says, in the middle third. But I think what's really sort of impressive about the Tyrone team is that they have a lot of very, very good footballers, very comfortable on the ball. Even when you think you've got them into a tight position, they're able to get out of it. Good guys on the ball, good decision makers. And Mayo's typical push and high press up the field, if they don't stop them and slow them up, and they get that could become a problem if they start to get slipped and Tyrone start to get players overloading the middle third of the field with runners.
O'Sheen.
Yeah, I just think that I think the matchups are significant for Tyrone. Who picks up Conroy and who picks up Ryan O'Donoghue? Because I really do think that those two guys are continuing to grow. I don't think that has been stunted in any way. I think Tommy Conroy would look back in his last day's performance and think, a lot of people would look back in his last day's performance and think it wasn't good enough, but I have to give him great credit because he just stuck in. And then when his couple of opportunities came, he was able to nail them. Conditioning-wise, he'll keep going. And I think that's when you can hurt Tyrone, is, when they start to wane a little bit. O'Donoghue, I like him because he takes a few chances. And they're gonna come off at some stage for him. So I think... they're big calls. Who picks up him? Probably Hampsey, I would imagine, will get Conroy. And as far as O'Donoghue is concerned, that's an interesting one. That could be Michael O'Neill or McKernan. The Damer O'Connor one is an interesting one as well. Maybe Kieran McGeary might might be detailed to mark him. But remember, he starts for the throw up in the middle of the field. It's usually Aidan O'Shea and Damon O'Connor start in the middle of the field. So I suppose Mayo have the opportunity to cause a little bit of confusion. But I can imagine Tyrone sitting in for 10 minutes, just figuring all that out, and then coming out and playing a little bit more. When Stephen talks about the fact that they haven't changed. I don't think they've changed that much either, and I think anybody who looks back in the games that will be proven. But I do think that there's a slight shift in mindset in that they definitely want, if it's on, it's definitely going into that full forward line. And I think the Monaghan game was a big game for me. First two balls they got, they put it in on top of Matty Donnelly. They got 1 point off it, and it keeps the team honest as well. In the fact that that's the first thing in your head, and that's something that you're willing to think about. And when you're planning for them, you have to plan for that as well. So, they haven't changed dramatically, but like the last day, you could even say that they reverted back to more tape than they've ever done. But I do think that the players there have seem more comfortable playing counter-attacking football and making better decisions than the opposition will make for the majority of the game. I mean, like, fair to say, Kerry got a fair old roasting, for losing the game the last day by a point.
I think they're just, Paul, just on what Oisin was saying as well in relation to, the selection and that. I think we'll get a good sense around what's Tyrone's view if Frank Burns starts, because he is typically played in a sort of that sweeper role. And if they are looking to apply themselves in a more man-on-man, getting all the matchups, or trying to dictate a lot more of the matchups, it'll be interesting to see if Frank Burns starts. And I think also, and I don't think it's coincidental that the game that Oisin refers to about Tyrone going a bit more direct against Monaghan was a game in which Mark Bradley started, right? Is this, like, I think with McShane and Canavan typically coming on, is this a game worth starting Mark Bradley to sort of try and link a little bit more of that play? Mayo will push up the field. Is he the type of ball player that you want to get maybe to link through the middle third to get those balls into the full forward line if they're going to play with two in there? And I think that's, they're, in fairness to Tyrone, they have a lot of options. And I think also, if Rory Brennan comes back into selection option, they'll have good defensive cover with himself and McCann being available as well. So, there's definitely options there for Tyrone, whether they want to change things up at the start or they want to maintain a very strong bench as well.
I think I don't know what Stephen thinks of this, but like, what's the possibility of Cohen, Carr or Flynn starting?
All three of them to start?
No. One of.
Instead of Darren McHale.
I'm not so sure. I think that Owen McLaughlin, if he doesn't start, does Oisin Mullen come straight back in, or does someone like Enda Hessian start? So it all depends on whether there's a full team available. But I would think if someone was to start of all of those, it might be someone like James Carr. I think that they'll try to use a Darren Corn off the bench, and also maybe Jordan probably covering the middle of the field, the half forward line. But again, it's a tricky one. It's always to do with, you're trying to play a little bit of cat and mouse, and for me, what we see, whether Tyrone start Frank Burns or not, is also going to give, as I said already, gives a bit of insight around how they're going to defensively set up.
I was just thinking the way Tyrone like to defend the arc, that Carr and Cohen are fairly good from distance, and look to be fairly confident. I mean, the first two balls they got when they come on the field last day, they turned around and shot. One of them, James Carr's first shot went wide, I think. But
yeah,
just to take that on, having only been you know, on the field. I just thought it showed serious confidence for a lad who hasn't played a massive amount of football all year. So I just think maybe they should start one of them. And you're probably right. Probably, you know, if they start Cohen, there's no way he's going to last the match. So maybe James Carr is the option now.
James Carr came on, had two chances, two shots, both from the slot. I think he would have backed him to score both of those ordinarily. And I think if he did that, if he got those in Tyrone, I don't see him missing again. Two more questions before we go about players. Aidan O'Shea. There's an opportunity if you played him at full forward to do things. I know this is not a popular view, but I think he was very close. I know he played poorly against Dublin. He was very close to having 4 points in 38 minutes.
Yeah, so we told you that the last day.
Yeah.
Well, I just think again, just not to keep on the decision making, but for me there was two things, and I think it sort of drained his confidence a little bit. The first one where he took the mark, he probably should have played on, and the second one where he played on, he probably should have took the mark. And it's probably just he's not used to, but he is a very experienced player, and I suppose, you know, he has video evidence now. He's had a good look at it. I'm sure that's been drilled home to him. So he's definitely an option in there. There's absolutely no doubt about that. I would not be averse to putting him in there.
I think there's two things. One, on the last day, I'm led to believe that he had very little training done in the 10 days leading up to it. And for a big guy, he probably needed that bit of sharpness. You know, I think Aidan would say it himself, his finishing isn't always his strength, all right? But for a big guy, he's got great hands, you know, and it's his tackling and his ability to sort of, you know, set the tone for them defensively is very important. And I think with playing him up front, I think that just early on, right, that maybe Tommy and Ryan will need a little bit of somebody in there to keep tabs on
a focal point,
and sort of, you know, back them up a little bit, because believe you me, those Tyrone boys will be getting to know the two lads, and having your 6'4" captain in there adding as a little bit of backup security, I don't think will be any harm.
The counter argument to that lads for me is, you know, Tyrone turn him over two or three times, bottle him up. You know, they'll get serious energy from that. I can picture them pushing them after they've done it and all that sort of thing. So, so just have to be careful. And probably this is a game where he does be a bit more fluent to move in and out, you know.
Yeah, but I do think he can take up a position. When they go to set up, he could take his position off coming from the wing. Because as I said, he's got very good hands. Like for a guy, he's got a basketball background. Like he could come on to balls coming at different angles and put in the runners, but even if he does play a foot forward, it won't be there for 70 minutes anyway. He will flow between the two.
But I actually think he needs to back himself a little bit more. He just refused the shot too much for me. You know, especially when he's on his the right side, onto his left foot, and you know he needs to, you know, I suppose. You know, confidence is a massive thing, but I think all he needs to do is kick one or two of them and then, you know, he can come alive.
I want to talk before we finish about the goalkeepers. Stephen, you know Rob Henley well. He obviously suffered after that All-Ireland final. What would the semi-final have done for him, this kicking that last point against Dublin?
Oh, it'll be massive. You know, like, I mean, you know, he's obviously had a, you know, his own story coming out of 2016, which is part of all our story in Mayo. But, you know, to get that opportunity, and, you know, like he's had a very good year, I suppose, when you've been, you know, going up against David Clark as your competitor. And unlike in any other position, when you're a goalkeeper, that's the only one you can. You can't be a wing back and a corner back on different days. And so he's had to be patient over the last 3 to 4 years waiting for that opportunity. But, like, you know, Mayo have been very fortunate that they've had two quality goalkeepers there. Robbie has played in a lot of All-Ireland finals. You know, he was in the 2012 and 13. The 2013 final he was in, the semi-finals in 14, The semi-finals in 15, he was the number one guy. But then that all, I suppose, as his story, it always was going to come down to, you know, something like putting it on his shoulders. And I think that he looks like a guy that is very confident in what he's doing. Yeah, he got a second bite of the cherry the last day now. And I don't know if there's, some people are saying, oh, they were lucky to get it. But some others are telling me that Conor Lane was sort of shouting at him beforehand or something to hold the shot. So maybe that did have something to do with it. But no, it's great for him. He'll have known the pressure that was on it. But just, you know, we're all just hoping that, you know, he can have a game. And I would hope that that it doesn't come down to goalkeepers to win the game the next day, even though the two of them look like they're hitting scuds from all different angles, the way things are.
Yeah, the 70-meter free is now in Ocean, and it changes the game a bit.
Yeah, no, it certainly does. Like, but if you want to roll back a little bit, like Morgan lost 8 of his 13 long kickouts the last day. I mean, those stats just wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't be pleasing for a goalkeeper. And I would say he was responsible for probably 5 of those, at least. So, like, his performances haven't been perfect, but he doesn't seem to be as rattled as what he used to be. I remember, I'm not sure, I think it's before your time in Donegal, but I remember him going up the pitch, you know, to kick frees against Donegal up in Ballybofey. He missed 2 of them, completely rattled, and it destroyed his game. It destroyed his kickouts, his handling, you know what I mean? And but I think he's moved along from that. But certainly, you know, to come up and kick that 70-meter free, and like when you consider, you know, Tyrone won the game by a point, it is an unbelievable kick. But he has that in his locker, and I think when the ball always travels a little bit further whenever it's All Ireland semi-finals or finals, because you just feel as if you kick it over the stand, I suppose, and that's the way it looked for me the last day. And even though, as I say, his long kickouts didn't work for him, he didn't really look particularly perturbed by any of it. Didn't look rattled. He just was determined to get on with it. So I think the biggest thing for Mayo is that, you know, that if Rob Henley is not a story after this game, I think that would be a good thing for Mayo, in that he's just doing his thing. He's coming up and he's kicking his frees, and he's not letting them affect him in any way either. But there will be huge pressure on those long free kicks, because, as I say, you know, I don't think there's a lot between these two teams. Obviously, you know, you've seen the semi-finals, how close they were. So I think we're talking about something similar. So they are huge moments in any game. But to be able to set the ball there and kick it over from the middle of the field, like, scary now.
I do think that the free taking is important. Like, as much as people talk about Tyrone the last day and their discipline and their tackle and everything, they still conceded 9 scorable frees. Now, you know, granted that David Clifford and Sean O'Shea are some of the two best practitioners in free taking, at the same time, you know, that would be something that I'm sure Tyrone will have focused on, that they don't give Mayo sort of that sort of oxygen to keep the scoreboard ticking. At the same time, just on Niall Morgan and those kickouts, you know, I think there was a bit of a plan there that they weren't going to go short. They had learned from Killarney that 3 out of those 6 goals that they conceded in Killarney were off kickouts, and by hook or by crook, they were not given Kerry that opportunity. And I think what they'll be really disappointed is that they didn't win any of the breaks. You know, for a team that were so ravenous for that scrappy ball inside their own 45, they didn't get to the pitch of the breaking ball, which I think, again, is something that they'll have worked on. But I don't see Mayo pressing Niall Morgan's kick out in the same manner as Kerry did. They'll press. They won't give it to them short, but I don't think that they will push up their 15 players to the 45-yard line and on. I don't see that happening.
Interesting, the free taking one. About 4 or 5 years ago, I did a piece on Tyrone's actual free taking, and they were at about 40%, and I think they're at over 90 now. So, like, that is a massive area, and like anyone, or you know, Tyrone couldn't win Ulster Championship matches, because when your conversion rate is like that, considering the amount of frees that they had, you know, and they've definitely come in and they've sorted that out. And McCurry's been a big part of that as well.
And McCurry has been massive this year. Like, I mean, 26 points and 50% of them from play. You know, I think he's you know, he's been on the scene for a while, but he's definitely playing the football of his intercounty.
Yeah, absolutely.
To finish up, Stephen, as you've already predicted that Mayo will win. Oisin, it's actually 6 weeks since you got a prediction right, and that was when you successfully predicted that Kerry would beat Cork in the Munster final. Who do you think will win next Saturday evening?
A bit harsh, considering like six weeks. Like, you're making it sound as if like we've had 20 matches in that time. Like,
well, if we want to hide behind that, that's fine. But go on.
There's nothing between these two teams, and as much as I've seen a hell of a lot of these two teams, and have great time for both of them in the way that they've managed to get themselves to an All-Ireland final. A lot of the actual analysis of what has been going on would lead you to think that, as I say, there's a kick of the ball between them. But I just can't see past Mayo, and I'm sure Mayo fans will absolutely hate me for that. But I just can't see past them. I just think there's just been something about them, and I don't want that to sound sort of airy fairy or half arsed. But I do think that there's more of a calmness about them than I've seen. And I think they'll have taken something huge from the All-Ireland semi-final. And in that regard, I'm not sure if Tyrone are able to get to the pitch of it again, because there's no obvious cause at this stage apart from winning All-Ireland, which should be enough. But Tyrone like a bit of edge to the game. And maybe the fact that everybody else in the country wants Mayo to win, maybe that'll help them, but I just don't know if Tyrone will be able to handle Mayo in the way that they handle Kerry, because when it comes down to it, Mayo have seen most of this stuff before. So Mayo.
I got that. Brian McGuigan, thank you very much for joining us. You've come in just in time to hear Oisin tip Mayo to win Sam next Saturday. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, glad with his track record the past few weeks, I'm glad to hear that. But in saying that, I was just thinking, like, and I hear there's a spot Pat's belonging on about when you're trying to go on the previous weeks to try and tip a game, it's nearly impossible in this year's championship to predict. All you can go on is what's went before, and it's just went totally against the grain when it comes to the matches.
But you think Tyrone will win?
Yeah, I honestly can't see any way how Mayo can win it. I just think of Tyrone's great form and the vibes around the county is great. And the weird thing, kind of like going back to 2018, I think everybody, supporters, was going down to Dublin and hope more than anything. I think they knew that we're coming up against a machine in the Dublin team. Whereas this year, you can feel it's definitely different coming up to the match where we really believe we can win this. And the surprising thing about the Tyrone camp at the minute is, like, usually when you're in the middle of the championship, you usually hear stories coming out of the camp, how people are going in-house matches and that. Like, with the whole COVID thing, like, you weren't hearing from the panel on what was going on. And people are asking you, who has COVID, who is this and who is that? I was talking to a couple of lads that's in the panel from Arbow, like, and they weren't giving away nothing. Like, there was nothing coming out of the camp at all. So I'm sure that's coming from the management team.
And how do you think they'll win it? What will be the key thing that will win the game for them?
Well, I just believe, like we're talking about how much experience and hurt that Mayo have after losing finals. But most of, like, looking back on the 2018 final, most of those lads in the own panel were there. So they've experienced the hurt too. We have now Matty Donnelly, Peter Hart, and those older lads experience that. As we get that stage where you know this could be the last chance to win an All-Ireland, so there's got to be plenty of drive on those boys. And I just feel that looking back to the last day, we were getting into the Kerry game and everybody was talking about how Kerry had a strong panel, how that a stronger panel at Tyrone. I know we're working now on hindsight, but looking back on that match, like it's, you know, like the Tyrone panel was far better than the Kerry panel. Looking at the subs that come on, the only thing is I do think that in the semi-final, up the semi-final, the Mayo subs had a big impact on the game too. But I just feel with the likes of Charlie McShane and Dara Canavan coming on, really that new lease of life at that stage where you really, really need it.
How would you compare this Tyrone team with your Tyrone team?
It's very hard to do. I think, you know, it's unfair on those players there. You had it in 2018 comparing it to our Tyrone team, but it's up to those lads now to make history for themselves. And I think we're fed up with talking to the team of the 2000s. Now we're talking with this team. They've excited us after their semi-final performance. And I just feel that, you know, looking previous to this year, I would have backed Mickey Hart. And I would have said that, you know, Mickey Hart's playing to the system that suits the players that he has at his disposal. And if you had told me going out against Kerry, we would have went man for man at the back. To match play, I would have said we had no chance. But they really manned up the last day of the defence. And I have to say, I didn't think they had it in them, but they really showed the Tyrone people what kind of football they can play. And as I said to you there, I would have said that Mickey Hart was playing the system that was required with the players at his disposal. But now I've kind of changed my mind. Fair play to Brian Doher and Fergal Logan. They've come in and they've put faith in the players and they're starting to play a bit of football now. So I just hope it continues.
Who's in charge?
I do think it is a joint effort. And again, when the Tyrone management team was put in place at the start of the year, I would have had my doubts on it because you had Brian Doher, Fergal Logan, Collie Holmes, Peter Donnelly, and Joe McCallum. They're all big characters in the change room. But sometimes that doesn't work. The thing that worked for us at that time was Mickey Hart had two or three men around him. But at the end of the day, Mickey Hart had the final say on what was happening, what team was picked, what we were playing. He was the boss. Whereas coming into this year, I was thinking, you're going to have too many big characters there. Who's going to be actually a boss? But they seem to have stumbled across some sort of chemistry where it seems to be working from. And definitely the players have a new freshness about them with the way it's set up at the minute.
Were you surprised Peter Canavan wasn't in that management team?
No. Well, I didn't think Peter would have been there. I definitely didn't think Peter would have been there because Dara was there. I think he was going to be fair to Dara. But although he was there and with under 21s here, the one that they all earn, you can be sure over the past 7-8 weeks that Peter Canavan has had some sort of input with the management. They're definitely having a word in his ear. Because looking back on the under-21s that time, you know, Fergal and Brian would have been the figureheads of that time, but definitely Peter had a big influence on that under-21 team, and I have no doubt that Peter's maybe paid an odd visit. I know he has been up with the free takers, and I hear you just talk about the 40% conversion rate that he had a few years ago. Now you can see there's definitely a big difference in that, and I think Peter's had a big input in it.
Stephen, how does it work now with your former manager of an inter-county team and you're in with Donegal, you're not the manager? How does the say work out between things like that, and how do you imagine it works out in Tyrone? Would you be comfortable in a joint management scenario?
I think, you know, I think Brian used the word there, chemistry. It is around respecting everybody's opinions and making sure that you're all aligned and working together. I think in fairness, what you saw on the pitch with Tyrone as regards them all being in it together is obviously something that that the players are seeing within the management as well. I know when I went to Donegal as coach, having been as a manager, actually it's lessons I probably learned from a club mate of Oisin's in Tony McEntee, whereby you know, I remember like Tony be pushing you and he'd be, you know, challenge you as he does. But, you know, at the end of the day, you understand that your role within the management is to back the manager. Like the manager has to have the say. So I think probably, you know, what Brian alludes to there, you know, they have a 5-man management team. Does everyone have a 20% call? Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But, you know, a lot of times it may, you know, there may be just one or two decisions that sort of require a little bit of a thinking and a little bit of a stepping back and thinking what needs to be done. But ultimately, you know, you got to back the manager. That's the role of the management team to do as well. You know, they're the ones that have to go out and face the music, face the players. So I think it's just, you know, making sure that you've got enough people aligned and of the same thought process. And obviously, Brian Duher and Fergal Logan, having been together at under 21, will have ironed out a lot of maybe what their thoughts are. So by the time they came to senior, I don't know whether there'd be too many crinks in their thought process.
When Tyrone go down to Dublin before big games, it's always the evening before, Brian. Is that right? Before this match?
Yeah, well, in our team, it always would have been Mickey Horan meticulous in everything he'd done. So we would have been down the previous weekend to run through the exact same what we're going to do the following weekend. So it always would have been the Saturday morning. We would have been down before the Sunday. So yeah, there's probably better to get out of the road of the whole build up to it. And we always like you down the Saturday morning. So I'm sure these boys will be no different. I know the last day they stayed in Dunboyne Castle and Meath, so I'm not sure what the plans are this week, but I think a short build-up will definitely help those players, because in fairness, there is a lot of hype around here, because from 2008, we really were 1-1, and there's a lot of young children about here. You go to matches now, and maybe their father say to you, the likes of me, Brian McGuigan, play, and they don't even know you. You know, the young ones don't even know you now, so there's a new generation coming, and they haven't experienced the whole build-up and winning Sam McGuire, so... there's a lot of hype about you, so maybe better for the players to get away good and early.
And is the general sentiment in Tyrone similar to yours, in the sense that they see a Tyrone victory and can't really see anything other than a Tyrone victory?
Yeah, well, that seems to be... I think it is massive. It was a massive boost for the whole... for everybody when Dublin get beat. It's give them a bit of hope, and that Dublin won is... as good this year as they were in previous years. And I think, you know, the players I have been talking to a few of them this week, and they seem very relaxed. And you asked me a question during the week about the build-up and in Tyrone leading up the matches, and I'm sure Ocean will talk about this, but in the 2003 final, like, we never felt as relaxed going into a final as we did in 2003, and the perception we would have had of that Armagh team. And again, I could be totally wrong, but we thought that maybe the Armagh tongue was a wee bit more uptight leading up in that game. And sometimes that can be a bad thing. I remember the story where we were talking about the Irish News All-Star Awards that night, and the Tyrone players were there good and early. And I think you were trained that night, Oisín, and you just come in, and then you left straight away, whereas the Tyrone players stayed and mingled with everybody else. And that's something that Mickey would have said to us, like, We embrace the media because we want the people to see our character and that. And we would have had Adrian Logan in telling us what to say to the media and all that time. And we went in that day. If you look before the 2003 final, we definitely looked relaxed. Whereas in the team huddle before the final that day, Armagh did look very uptight. But I don't know, Oisín could tell me a different story than that. But
you'd actually be down.
Our character.
Say that again, Oisín.
That was just our character. We were a tight bunch of fuckers anyhow.
But it would have been like... in fairness, we were going for our first one, whereas Oisín News were going for two in a row. And it's hard to know who the more pressure was getting into that match.
Yeah, but it was Tyrone. And I think that sort of... even I know it was an All-Ireland final, and that definitely obviously added to the occasion. The first All-Ulster final. And like, if you remember that time, it was front page, it was back page news, and... I remember the what do you call it, the Irish News were running the thing, who has the best looking players, and to put two players up against each other. And like it was.
Can you name my name and mention that one then?
What?
I can't name my name and mention that
one.
No,
you weren't in that one, no. but it felt I always described 2003 as fairly claustrophobic. And it was very difficult to get away from it. And even when you went to Dublin, like, you know, on the Saturday, like, you know, you've put in 3 weeks of, you know, just in it. I felt what was insane pressure. You know, you add in the ticket situation and all that. Like, it was, the whole thing was mental. And maybe we hadn't managed it in the way that we should have. We didn't probably have the same. We maybe let things drift a little bit as opposed to the year before, because maybe we were trying to, you know, be more relaxed, and maybe the fact that we were putting an effort into being more relaxed, we ended up more uptight, you know.
Brian, you had actually gone to that 2002 final to shout for Armagh, is that right?
Well, I mean, actually been behind the goals and the canal end watching Armagh, and I wouldn't have had the same rivalry with Armagh as, say, the Moy lads. Whereas down here, it's all Derry. Like, where I'm from, it's my biggest rivalry is Derry. And I actually went to that Armagh match hoping Armagh would win, believe it or not. I don't know whether I was right or I was wrong. But they definitely give us, and I mean going to a GPA do after it. A few of us young lads, me and Muggsy and Kevin Hughes, and that went to the GPA do after that there that year. And most of Armagh players were there. And looking on with envy at the success they had at that time, and it probably did drive us on to success at that time. But you know, going in that 2003 final, like it's all really a blur to me. I took sick on the Friday before the match, and like I woke up on Saturday morning, and it just my energy levels were nothing, like. And Mickey Hart, we landed down the hotel, and Mickey Hart had said to me, look, well, the team meetings and all were on, and we're going for something to eat. And Mickey Hart told me to go to bed just to the Sunday morning and see what way you were on Sunday morning. And I think it was partly to do with nerves too, but I got up Sunday morning, still wasn't feeling great. And then I got a wee injection that morning to give me a bit of a boost, and it got me through the match all right. But then after the match, we were at the banquet that night. It's just like hitting a brick wall. I went to bed early that night. It wasn't a Noma the next day for the home given, because it just was drained, totally drained.
And couldn't do it. And can I ask you, 2003, 2005, two brilliant matches, and you played superbly in those games. Before the 2008 final, you had a couple of years of horrific injuries. You came back in, you got back in the team for 2008. And I have to ask you this about the run-up to the 2008 final, because Martin Penrose started in front of you in 2008. When did you know that was happening?
We went to training on the... We usually met up on the Thursday night, and Mickey would have had... would have named the team the Thursday night, but before training started that night, he pulled me and Kieran Gourley aside. And I broke my leg in 2006 and the hurt the eye in 2007. I lost my peripheral vision on my left eye. So I kind of, like, for the way I played, I kind of depended on my vision. So I knew myself that I was never going to be the same player again. So I accepted that. The fact that I was even back playing on the throne setup and I was gearing up for an All-Ireland final was bonus territory for me. Like, so... we met, and I played okay that year in the games that I started, but it definitely wasn't the same player. Leading up into the 08 final, then there was talk going around that Marty Penrose might be starting, but Mickey pulled me and Kieran Gourley aside, and before training, and he says, "Look, I'm going to name two of you in the team." He says, "But we have a plan that we're going to play. Joe McMahon was playing number 12." And he says, "We're going to pull him back, the full back for the mark of twin towers, but we don't want anybody to know." So he pulled us aside and he said, "We won't start him." He says, "I want you to do one thing." He says, "Do not tell a sinner that you're not starting." So we went out to train, and I travelled home with my brother. Like, I'm home, I'm a wife, it was the house, never told anybody.
You told absolutely nobody. You told nobody at all.
No. Because they knew if I had to get out, then our plan would have been would have got out too. So Mickey did promise me. He says, look, he says I'm definitely gonna need you, possibly for the last 15-20 minutes. And that was right. Just about 2 hours before the game, I texted my family to say I wasn't starting, and Ward was starting to feel about that I wasn't starting. And look, I accepted it then, and true to Mickey's word, it panned out exactly the way he said it would. 15-20 minutes to come on and maybe slow the game down a bit. But as I say, from the previous year, when that final whistle went, I never thought I would get back there, but it was great.
Stephen, what's it like to tell somebody they're not starting an All-Ireland final?
Well, I think, you know, from a coaching and a management point of view, it's the hardest part of the gig. You know, telling guys that they're not going to be in the 26. You know, that can be you're not going to be in the team. It's probably the most distracting thing of the week of any championship game. Definitely more difficult, obviously, an All Ireland final. It's what all the players. You know, aspire to at the start of the year. It certainly was, yeah, ambition, but you know, it at any time, you know, team selection, you know, or my own view on it was that I remember 2017, we didn't start Paddy Durkin in the two Kerry games. I remember telling Paddy, saying to him, if we get to the final, I said, I know you're going to be back in the team, you know, but there was a plan and there was a view on sometimes. That plan was for us. I remember in 2017, we were waiting. Stephen O'Brien kept coming on for Kerry at the start of the second half in all the championship games, and he was scoring like 2 or 3 points or a goal 1-1. So we wanted a plan to be able to counteract that. Lo and behold, Stephen O'Brien starts both them bloody semi-finals. But so Paddy's there thinking you're telling me one, but at the same time, you know, selection is only ever somebody's, or you know, it's a moment in time. You just try and be really honest with the players.
How do you tell them?
Like for me, it was always the Thursday morning. We'd be then training. Probably had our last session because we'd be traveling a lot to Dublin. That you'd be having those conversations with them, either over the phone or you'd try and go and meet them, depending on which was the more. It was a more difficult, you know, chat to have. But typically, you're just trying. For me, it was just being honest, just saying this is the reason behind it. But no more than what Mickey was saying to Brian there, those guys typically had a role to play, and just being clear and honest with them. But it was that was most certainly the hardest part of the manager's job.
Thank you very much for your time today, Stephen. I know you have to head away, so and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon. Brian, I want to ask you, is there a real edge between Tyrone and Mayo?
I don't think, no, compared to maybe the edge that there would have been with Tyrone and Kerry, I don't think it's there. But certainly both teams will have to bring an edge to them if they want to succeed on Saturday. And I do think that both teams have it in them. I think there's a wicked streak in both those teams.
What do you mean by that?
Well, no, I don't mean that in a bad way, but definitely when it's come to the crunch, the last day, you can see there's a different attitude in the Mayo players, definitely in the last 10 minutes, and even in the Connacht final against Galway, the second half performance to put in was unreal. But I think the edginess comes into the Tyrone defence this year. You're starting to see a bit of edginess that the likes of our team would have had where they're maybe giving a bit of afters after the ball is played away or whatever. And sometimes I think that's a good thing in a team. And sometimes you can frustrate forwards when that happens. So I know most of these lads from playing club football with them, like they're all good players and they have it in them to win this week. And as I said before, I can't see how that Mayo team will overcome Tyrone on Saturday. Like,
do you think they'll struggle to score? Is it that just think you struggle to see Mayo scoring against them?
Well, yes. Looking back on the Dublin game, I think after 62 minutes, Dublin were still winning that game by 4 or 5 points. And you could see no other way how Mayo was going to win that game. I also think if Tyrone get themselves in a winning situation, that they will see out the game. Something that in big games we haven't been doing this past few years. If you look at the Kerry game in extra time, and all credit to Kerry, the game looked dead and buried when Tyrone went 5 points in front in extra time. With six minutes plus another minute additional time and extra time, Kerry had got it back down to a point from 5 points down, and looked as if Kerry were going to get over the line. But Tyrone, when they got the ball, they held on to the ball well and defended the win. And that's something that started last 2 or 3 minutes, where you're up by a point, you have to keep the ball. All those Tyrone players are very comfortable on the ball.
So, Oisin, that's kind of the complete opposite of how you see it. And it's a persuasive case he makes.
No, it is. The only thing, you know, the last day, like Tyrone, like they didn't mind the ball as well as what you maybe thought they did. I mean, they give the ball away 27 times, which wouldn't really be Tyrone like. And I feel as if Mayo will bring an extra physicality, an extra edge. Brian's talking about the edge that Tyrone have. Mayo have an edge as well, especially defensively. You know, when we talked about in the lead up to the Kerry game, we said there wasn't enough rugged defenders, maybe is the best way to put it. And that proved to be the case. Mayo have them in abundance. They have Keegan, they have O'Hara, they have Mullen. Have Cohen, who can do a job, you know, Dorkin as well. So it just means that I think a lot of it will be based on, you know, who makes the better decisions just in that final third, because there is going to be a lot of patience required, as in the build-up play, the breakdown, both defences. Like, you would look at one side and you think, well, Mayo are going to find it very difficult to break down that thrown defence, the amount of bodies you get back. I think it's quite similar at the top end of the field. I think, you know, Mayo have certainly looked better in defence this year. You look at the way they played second half against Dublin, what they concede, 2 points in 40, 50, 60 minutes. So I suppose that's the only thing I'd say is that Brian's argument is definitely concrete. But on the flip side of that, like, Mayo just aren't going to let them, you know, play the football that they played the last day. And remember, they still only beat Kerry by a point. And I think that the thing about Mayo is that different players have stepped up all year. I think they can get a lot from the middle of the field. I think both Loftus and Rowan can cause a lot of problems. I think Oisin Mullen coming back in will cause problems. Paddy Dorkin, O'Connor, who probably hasn't, you know, had the year that he's had in the past. He's still working hard. And it comes down to then O'Donoghue and Conroy. I think on the opposite end of the field, the best argument I can give for Tyrone is I think McCurry is playing out of skin. I think that he won't be happy with the last day, even though he had a serious impact on the game. But it was fits and starts. Otherwise, he was quite one mark. So I do think that... I do think, as I said, like there's damn all between the teams. Energy, you know, who brings the most energy will have a serious part to play in it. And if both teams bring the intensity, I mean, like we're talking about records as far as turning the ball over. The ball was turned over 72 times the last day, 70 the game before. We could be heading for the hundreds with these two teams, because a lot of their game is built around that.
It's more enjoyable, though, isn't it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, take the last two games that we've had over what we've had in the past. I mean, you know, like it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I agree that his argument on if you look at the Mayo defence compared to the Kerry defence. Like it's head and shoulders above the Kerry defence, and I actually thought that the Kerry defence done decent on the Tyrone forwards. Looking at McCurry, yes, Oisin said he done a job, but he was still quiet. Tom O'Sullivan got the better of him definitely earlier on. McKenna was quiet enough, bar the two goals, so still contributed. But then you look and like Tom O'Sullivan or the Mayo men, Keegan and O'Hara and Mullen, they're doing a good job. Maybe Dara Canavan and Cahill McShane coming on. So my only worry for Tyrone would maybe be in midfield, where I think Ruan and if it's Dermot O'Connor are very mobile and they can hurt you going forward. Kennedy and Kilpatrick are just looking to try and get us a stranglehold in the middle of the field. And I went away after the last day at the match thinking that they weren't overly impressive. But looking back and watching it again, they still are. Kilpatrick went through a lot of work, yeah. And Kennedy caught a couple of big kickouts, which were at vital stages. But I think the most interesting thing might be you could have a Laura Corbett situation in the hurling that time where you could have Myler and Kieran McGeary, who could be given jobs of marking Mayo players because they're good man markers. And then you have Mayo who are thinking, we have to man mark McGeary and Myler. So you could have a throw man chasing a Mayo man chasing a throw man, because really McGeary and Myler are so important the way this throwing team play.
It's interesting though, finals are different. You can be having a great year and then it unpeels in the final. And the key person comes out of left field, and that is
somebody out of left field could even be Aidan O'Shea, who hasn't, you know, people's questioning whether Aidan O'Shea should be starting or not. But I think it's Aidan O'Shea has to start because it's what Aidan O'Shea gives to you when he goes back. I think whenever the tide's going against Mayo, Aidan O'Shea can put in a big hit. He can do a good tackle. So he is a big personality for that team, and I think he has to be starting.
Yes, and that's where we're going to leave it with a huge match to look forward to next weekend. Brian, thank you very, very much for joining us today. Thank you to Larry Ryan for running the podcast, to Raf Rocket, to Tony Lean, to Reno, to everyone at Examiner Sport. Huge thanks to Oisin, as I say, to Brian, and also to Stephen Rochford. We'll be back soon.
Thanks, Paul.
With Renault, thanks. Passion for what drives you. Official car partner of the GAA.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.